Steve.
Hey, Emma.
What do you do when you really like something?
You know what I do, Emma? I talk to all my friends about it. What do you do?
That's a great idea, Steve. I even tell strangers on iTunes how much I rate and review it.
What a great idea. Hello, listener, and welcome to a Zeitgeist Tapes World Cup special, in which Emma and I decided, in order to try to ride the wave of World Cup enthusiasm, and I'm sure England are going to go on and win that World Cup, of course, subject to tattoos and all the people who will be losing to, we thought we'd have something that had a World Cup theme, and that was harder than you might think, with a World Cup theme and some politics in it too, because apart from Escape to Victory, one of Michael Caine's less regarded films. In fact, most of Michael Caine's films are less regarded. It's amazing how his career survived all his bad choices. apart from that one film, I couldn't think of anything else apart from this one novel, which was, I think, news to you, Emma, wasn't it? This novel that we're about to discuss.
Yes, I hadn't come across it at all. But to be fair, books based around the World Cup aren't really my wheelhouse. So, as I'm sure our listeners will become more than aware of, my knowledge of football is scant.
Well, we're trying to expand our listenership from that one sad male geek who just listens to every single podcast that comes out by through Creation. So, what I should do is introduce that which we are going to discuss. It is the novel Heartland by Anthony Cartwright. That was published in 2009, but is set in 2002, in the early stages of the 2002 World Cup, which of course everybody knows apart from Emma, was staged in Japan and Korea. And in the early stages of the World Cup, England, under the astute managership of Sven-Goran Eriksson, played Argentina. And the conceit of the novel is that it weaves the game and the narrative about what was going on in the game with two other kinds of competition. One is an actual football match between a local community football team that has been lately sponsored by the British National Party, because this is 2002, listener, and the BNP were alive and kicking in areas like Cinderheath, which is where the novel is based, which is a fictionalised part of Dudley in the West Midlands. And the other competition that's being that weaves its way through the novel is a election in the ward, in Cinderheath Ward, which hitherto has been a safe Labour seat. And so the novel kind of takes those three strands all the way through. Now, those of you who are not familiar with the World Cup will not know the result of the England-Argentina game. And none of us, of course, will know the result of the game, the local game between the community team and, as I should have mentioned earlier, a team that is predominantly Muslim, which is a Muslim team. And so there's racial tension in that football match. And of course, nobody knows what the result will be of the ward election, which is kind of dominated by the racial tensions that the local football match is bringing out. So it's a kind of a clever little conceit of bringing in the World Cup, but it does kind of reflect on the life of all the people in Cinderheath, a working class, largely sort of council house community, and the people that live there across the racial ethnic divide, and their different reactions to the England game, the local game, and the ward election. And the characters are drawn from either side of that divide, largely around the main character Rob and his family and his friends. And so it's a novel about working class life in a certain part of England in 2002. And I don't know what you thought about it, Emma, despite the football. What did you think about it?
I found it really enjoyable eventually. It's written in quite a complex way. So it has two conceits that take a while to get the rhythm of. First of all, it writes a lot of its dialogue phonetically with a very strong Dudley accent. Now, I read enough Scottish noir that I'm quite used to reading phonetically, but it took my head a while to translate it into that accent in particular. And it was very, very strong accented at times. So I, you know, it took me a while to kind of go, what is it that they're saying there? And then secondly, it cuts through different sections. So the people in the clubhouse watching the World Cup game, the football game between the Cinderheath team and the local mosque, and the election, and then everybody's lives. So it cuts in and out at different times in their lives, and it doesn't really... I don't know, because I read this on a Kindle, so I don't know if it's clearer... I don't know if it's clearer in the physical book, whether it makes the distinctions clearer, whether it changes like type or something, because that again took me a while to get into in terms of following. So with those two caveats aside, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, it had a very moving end. The characters were very real. There was a lot of pathos. Some really interesting exploration, particularly of manhood and the role of work and football and leisure and politics in to these working class men. And the breakdown of tradition and the effect that had on community. All of these were really well explored, I thought, through the novel.
Yes, I read it in the paper form, and I can say actually it was comparatively easy to follow because it was the different sections that started with a bold first line and things like that. And you even know when you're halfway through the novel, because given that the novel is kind of following two football matches, even though they're in separate times, you get half time.
That is true on the Kindle too. So yeah.
Which I don't know if anybody else is like me, but when I start reading a novel, I want to know, you know, how long does it take and how many pages, you know, am I halfway through yet? So when it actually had the whole section at half time, it's like, yes, that's my kind of novel.
See, when you're reading a Kindle, it tells you what percentage you're at on every page. So that's less of a joy for me now.
but yeah, this was the second time I'd read it, and so maybe things were slightly clearer to me. But it's a novel about a working class area. A mixed working class area. The protagonists are mostly white and male, they're not the only protagonists. It's about how do people get along in a working class community where industry is gone, where there isn't very much going on generally. There were problems at school, problems with the young people in terms of literacy and the absence of a desire for kind of a work ethic, which the older generation clearly had, but then they had the factories to go with it. Mm. And about how do you kind of try to negotiate the tensions that have evolved out of that community between Muslims and non-Muslims, and there's also something else that's going on in this community. There's a new mosque is being built, and that's the issue that the British National Party, as was their wont, sort of alight upon, and that becomes a kind of touchstone for some of the disengaged, disenchanted, and they are by the way almost everybody, the disenchanted members of the community, in terms of what the council is doing, what politics is doing generally for them. They see the mosque, the building of this new so-called super mosque, as being an exemplar of how Muslims are being treated in a more privileged way compared to everybody else. So it tries to negotiate all these complexities along with like football, which can bring these two different these groups together. Even though they're not totally separate, it can bring them together, whereas the other football match, the local one, can draw them apart. And it's partly how the character Rob, who is a kind of, he is a failed professional footballer who's working as an assistant in school to help kids with problems with literacy, how he negotiates all of that. And his background is really interesting because he's involved in what is a kind of a racial assault on a taxi driver, on a Muslim taxi driver, which leaves this guy disabled and he dies in the end. He's got that in his background, but he isn't a racist. It is something which happened. He was kind of involved in, and it's about the complexity of those relationships, because one of his best friends, Zubair, is a Muslim. One of his former friends, Adnan, who disappears, which we can talk about maybe later, disappears. So he's got very good friends who are Muslims, and he is explicitly anti-racist.
Yeah, Rob is explicitly anti-racist. His father, Jim, is the local council candidate standing against the PMP. Uncle, sorry, you're right. His father is Tom, isn't it? Sorry. And it explores their family dynamic. Rob is a failed footballer. His father was expected to be a great footballer, but then was felled by injury. It sort of revealed that he may or may not have got there, and the injury may have come at a time when actually he got then to write his own narrative rather than the narrative of his that would have mirrored his son's career. You know, the football is part of their identity, and not just as the this is where I was going to find my way out, my success. And I don't think it was way out, actually. It was how I was going to find success within my community, because Rob, when he is young and successful, he gets his flashy car and he gets his nice flat, but they're both in Cinder Heath. He's not taking it elsewhere, and he's actually miserable when he goes off to another team in, I think he goes to play for Wrexham for a year. It's not described as a very happy time in his life. So there are lots of different ways that football is important to them as human beings. And there's an exchange quite near the end of the novel between the new head teacher, who's not from round here and is clearly sort of exemplifies that incoming Blairite middle class attitude that did turn around a lot of schools. Let's not mince words about it, but also rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way. And she asked Rob to take off his England top because it could cause tensions within the community. It really exemplifies this. And, I exemplify it myself, people who don't get football making judgments about people who do. And those judgments being very class-based and quite dismissive.
Yes, that's a very interesting kind of moment, isn't it, in the novel, because it is largely about people from that community, and you don't get that many characters apart from the new head and the deputy head as well, who also comes from outside. You don't really get those characters, but when you do, it was quite an interesting moment, because she brought him in and said there's some people are going to find that offensive, and he just didn't really know what to say. He was frustrated by not feeling able to kind of counter that by just, I presume, just saying it's an England shirt. You know, this is what we are. You know, and actually Zubair, his best friend, is as keen on England as anybody else. So it kind of was raising questions, because actually the novel raises lots of questions for you to think about. It doesn't necessarily resolve any. It's not didactic. It's not propaganda. It kind of raises these interesting conflicts and suggests maybe ways in which people might negotiate them, but it doesn't say they're right, they're wrong, and in the way that head did.
And it was a really nice contrast in some ways, almost a conceit, but actually you can completely see it happening, between his being pretty much right but inarticulate, and her being articulate but wrong, and that winning the day. And again, that was, within that moment, you could sense the frustration of that white working class community who had so much sort of taken away. And Rob was exemplifying the sort of best elements of that. And there are other characters in the book who exemplify worse reactions to that. But it's Rob who's being, you know, at this moment, very, very much downtrodden.
Yes, he is. He's struggling through all kinds of different situations in his life, but he's being looked down on. I mean, that's what makes it a very interesting novel. Because I don't know how many novels there are about the white working class. I mean, these days that actually take the perspective of the white working class and actually just tries to unpick the complexity of that and to actually have the main character is someone that goes around wearing an England shirt who was involved in a kind of racial assault in his youth and is actually very sympathetic. He's a fully rounded, complicated character, as is one of his kinder friends, Glenn, who is very keen on the BNP, but isn't a dark-hearted villain. And towards the end, there's some kind of reconciliation, isn't there?
Yeah, Glenn is, you know, really wants to be in the room, wants to feel more empowered. So, feels that the BNP is the way that that's going to happen. It's clearly articulating that rage of we've lost everything, we want to take something back. And the closest people that Glenn and people like him can see to take something back from is the local Muslim community. So he gets further and further involved and seduced. I mean, it is almost a seduction by the, you know, they describe the candidate for the BNP as very slick, wears a sharp suit, has the gelled hair, all of the kind of, you know, attributes.
And it's not even from around here.
Not even from around here. And in some ways, it's quite interesting that the comparison between the way that they describe the BNP character and Beckham, who is the other sharp-suited, well-dressed, well-coiffed character in the book. And again, you know, there are two different ways that you can go. But because Beckham's had the success in his life and has ended up in the World Cup, he hasn't ended up as a local. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that David Beckham would ever have ended up as a local BNP candidate. Let me be very clear about that. But yeah, there's this kind of sharp-suited and booted working class that is looked up to by people like Glenn, and that can be used in malign ways or it can be used in positive ways. And Glenn ends up in this secret meeting where they are shown a film of a very aggressive racial assault. And Glenn has a realization that actually that's not what he wants. He doesn't want to be there. He wants to be home with his family. And while he may have racial grievance, he doesn't have it to a violent extent. Glenn comes semi-good in the end.
Yes, he does. I mean, in fact, I'm trying to think. I mean, probably the BNP candidate and the head are in their different ways. These are the outsiders. Who are trying to define that community in their own preconceived ways. One may be, you know, progressive in a sense, the head, and the other reactionary in terms of the BNP. But they're trying to impose a way of thinking on that community, which cuts asunder all the complex relationships which they've got, which go across the kind of ethnic divide. But one of the interesting characters is Uncle Jim, is Rob's Uncle Jim, who is the councillor, the Labour councillor, who's been doing his job for a number of years and usually very easily getting re-elected. But in this election, he thinks he might lose. I mean, the BNP are standing, they've got the mosque. And it's quite a useful thing just to read out an excerpt as we are wont to do. Unfortunately enough, this is one that doesn't involve me reading anything out in a cod Dudley accent. It's the narrator's voice. So this is the narrator. And Jim is doing some council work to try and organise his thoughts about how he should get across his campaign. So, and he also takes us through something about the area as well. So I've been lumbered with the responsibility of reading this section out, but it's worth thinking about because it does reveal quite a bit. What he was doing was doodling a map of the ward. It helped him think. There were just under 10,000 people in Cinderheath Ward. Of those, 2,000 were Muslim. The vast majority of the rest were white. The Muslim population was younger than the white one. Say 500 were kids, so couldn't vote anyway. That left 1,500. Say turnout would be 30-odd percent, if that. That only left 500 people. Even if all 500 voted for him, there were still a couple of thousand votes in the rest of the ward. Most of them should have been Labour voters. In fact, they all should have been Labour voters, allowing for a few hundred Tories around the park, except now, suddenly, they were all going to vote BNP. It was a fashion. It was ridiculous to even think he might lose. It wasn't just the posters, Wesley and Nancy, for God's sake. It was a strength of feeling, an undercurrent, a lingering resentment that Jim could feel, throbbing from the streets all around him, from people he'd known all his life, and getting into his head, us and them, what they get, what we do. He rubbed it at his temples and stared at the map. The turnout would be bigger because of the BNP. Maybe it would mean more Labour voters would come out too because of the threat of losing the seat, but he wasn't sure people were that bothered. Why should they be, given the evidence of what it was to them? There'd be loads who'd never voted before, not kids, but young ones in their 20s and 30s queuing up to vote for Bailey, the BNP candidate. He'd asked Stacey the other night if she'd ever voted, and she just looked at him blankly, like he'd asked her if she'd ever been to the moon. Mind you, if he was being honest, it had never bothered him that much before. People would tut about the turnout at the count and in the days and weeks afterwards. But what did it matter, really, if you got elected? In most wards, you knew exactly what was going to happen. Who cared if two-thirds, three-quarters, four-fifths of the population couldn't be bothered to vote if you knew you were going to win? So that kind of sets up his kind of perspective. And he is kind of a little bit cynical, but he's not cynical in the dark-hearted way. It's just how to basically work where he is, the ward and the collection of people. And so there's one neat bit where he sends out different leaflets. He sends out different leaflets in different languages to appeal to, you know, people that don't speak English and people that do. And in the ones in Urdu and other languages, he comes out strongly in favour of the new mosque. But in the English leaflets he sends out, he's a little bit more hesitant in describing what his attitude is to the mosque.
I mean, I'm not sure I call him cynical so much as I call him jaded.
Yes.
I think he's not cynical. Would mean he did all the work that he does, you know, not putting his heart into it. What he is doing lots and lots of the day to day council graft that nobody ever gets rewarded for, and just feeling like he's not making any difference when it's made very clear through a number of the sort of minor character storylines that Jim has made a difference and he has got people housing and sorted out people's credit and got people jobs. And, you know, basically it seems to have had a word with just about everybody to get just about everyone their job. So I think that he's feeling run down, jaded. He's not getting on with the local party. I think it feels a little bit like old Labour right versus new Labour. It's definitely not old Labour versus new Labour, but quite possibly Labour first versus progress in terms of your factions, if you want to get really into the weeds on this. You know, he is at the Midlands is where Labour first are very strong. That's where they're kind of their heartland is. And he is your classic sort of white working class Labour, used to work in the factories, believes in the union, believes in the Labour Party, but doesn't really know what it's all for now that the factories are all closed. And that's, you know, he's really, you know, he keeps sort of talking about why am I still in the party? The party don't seem to like him or want to support him. And he doesn't make himself very likable to them. And there is no give and take in his relationship with his fellow councillors, for example. But he is, you know, his heart is absolutely 100% in the right place. He wants to represent his community. He thinks a lot about what the community is, what it's for, who it's for, who it is. You know, he thinks very deeply, if not philosophically, about Cinderheath. And you can tell that he's lived there his whole life and that he cares about it incredibly, incredibly. And you know, the fact that that is what is making him jaded is so interesting and so representative, I think, of how many people, certainly at that point in the Labour journey, were feeling.
I mean, he's kind of, I mean, the whole novel really, the time in which it's set, but also when it's written, it's published in 2009, which means it was written before the financial crisis, you know, hit. But it's set in 2002, so the year after New Labour's second landslide. But by then, people were already talking about, you know, New Labour wasn't really taking its heartlands. I think that was the phrase, seriously. That there was this sense that it's in power, but what's it doing for those areas? There is that sense that, and there are different references. You know, 97, there was hope, but now nothing seems to have changed. So there's a quiet desperation and dissatisfaction about what's not happening for those people. And Jim is kind of at the apex of it. I mean, you're absolutely right. He wants to do the right thing, but he just doesn't think that very much is happening. And he does what he can do for the individuals in the community, but he doesn't really think that his role is really being properly, he's not really performing the function that he would like to perform. And so when the BNP comes along, I think he just almost thinks, well, the game's up. I'll fight this campaign, but I don't think I'll win. And he just feels distant from the people that he's represented for many years. And they're almost all antagonistic towards him, aren't they? There's a horrible scene when he's kind of confronted by these young people playing football. And he gets very, very nasty for him. And they don't know who the hell he is. And he's been their counsellor for years, but they don't know who he is. They don't care. And so it's of its day, but actually many of the themes that are in the novel, I mean, you can see, you know, retrospectively, you can see Brexit. You can see these people would all be coming out to vote to leave, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, this is the thing, is that this book was written in 2009. So it was written just after the crash, but it's based in 2002. But even then, the seeds of, the populism that came after the crash, Brexit, Trump, all of that stuff, the real rejection of we're all middle class now, Labour, is absolutely there. And, you know, such a warning sign that has, you know, clearly yes. been missed. And I think that, you know, there was a lot of just rejection of any talk of class in the Labour Party for such a long time that, of course, people like Jim felt that they were being left behind. You know, they're not in London, Manchester, Leeds, or even Birmingham. I suspect that, you know, there's quite a big Dudley Birmingham divide, as there is, say, for example, I mean, if you ever listen to Lisa Nandy respond to being told that Wigan is part of Greater Manchester, you'll know that, you know, the differences between in 20 miles matter a great deal to the people who live there. I mean, you know, for example, I wouldn't be caught dead in West London, but that's my own personal gripe. But yeah, these things matter to people. They are part of our cultural identity, and to have had that denied for so long, and to just be told over and over by the people who were set up to represent class interests that it was no longer important, no wonder that caused such a huge backswell of resentment. And what we're seeing in this novel is sort of the seeds of that, the beginning of that, and it exemplifies it so well.
Yes, and because it is all about class, isn't it, really? I mean, the ethnic divide is there, but it raises its complex issues, but it's something that the community itself is negotiating in its own way. I mean, towards the end there's an attack on a young boy, where he gets stabbed, slashed on the face, and there's an assumption that this is a racial attack. It's a gang of Muslims on this, you know, on Andre, the young lad, and it isn't. It isn't, in fact. Then it transpires that the gang attack it's a mixed race gang. The Woodies is what they call themselves, and the problem was that the Andre refused the initiation ceremony to become part of the gang, and he's now part of the gang, and it transpires that the Woodies are kind of trying to look after each other. It's a multiracial gang of boys, largely, I think, some of whom have got issues with literacy. And the gang is their way of trying to look after themselves, you know, on the borders of criminality and on the other side of it sometimes. But there's a kind of a gentle suggestion that this gang, which people see as a threat, is actually one way in which this group, this generation, can try and look after themselves, because essentially nobody else is. Because the local council, even Jim, is dismissive of what the council's done, a Labour council, presumably. And they're all, like you say, distanced from the government.
One of the key themes in this is belonging. And that's what gangs give people who don't have anything else. They give you a sense of belonging. And if you don't all work at the same factory, if you don't all, go to the same community centre, because some of you go to the mosque one and some of you go to Cinderheath one, then you are missing that sense of belonging. And I think that's a really key element that, a lot of the, particularly the older white characters, so Jim, Tom, Rob to an extent, even though he's not that much older, they are lacking that sense that they have a thing that they once had, which was that they belonged to Cinderheath and Cinderheath belonged to them. And that has been ripped away from them with nothing put in its place.
Mm. Yes, and except football, which was there before, which can... Football is, for the men at least, the women don't really participate in that at all. For the men at least, football is a place for your hopes, for yourself, maybe as an individual, maybe, in terms of Rob and his father, hopes that you could actually be able to express yourself in a certain way. But also hopes that, when everyone comes together to watch England play Argentina, the racists, the anti-racists, everybody, people have had big arguments. They're all focused on England and what may or may not happen. Maybe England will win the World Cup, is what they all hope. But also it's a place of disappointment as well. But that's what appears to give meaning to quite a lot of men's lives in the absence of everything else. There isn't anything else, it appears.
Yeah, and football is obviously a huge, huge, huge focus. Mm. I watched bits of the World Cup every year. Every 4 years. I'm that clued up. I tend to watch a few England matches, and sometimes I can get very into it and cheer it on. But it's not just that central to my identity that I don't have in myself. So I was trying to think about other things where that is part of like who I am and key identifier for me. And I think part of the pathos of the novel, of course, is that you hear so often in the scenes where they're watching the World Cup, oh, we could win it this year. England could win it. And that was, if I recall, that period was a fairly golden period in English football. Beckham was basically...
Relatively.
That was the point I'm coming to, which is I don't know how well we did in that World Cup, but I know we didn't win it. And so this is hope that we know from our perspective as a reader is going to be dashed. So, they have this wonderful moment, but we know that it's ephemeral and will continue to be, and that England will get worse, not better.
No, it's one of the three, all three of those competitions that I mentioned right at the start that kind of underpin the whole novel. There's the England game, which, I mean, there's some spoilers coming, so, it won't spoil the novel if you know, but, nonetheless. England beat Argentina 1-0, but we know that England don't win the World Cup, so it's a bit of a hard game, but they just about win. But it's not going to lead to a great victory. The local game between the white community football team and the Muslim community football team, that ends in a draw, which means that neither of them win the league, because it's a Sikh team that has this fluky result that wins, I think, 12-0 or something, which means that they win. So neither side wins that. And then Jim, Uncle Jim, is re-elected, but only by about 60 votes. The majority is almost gone. So it's a victory, but it's hardly a euphoric one. So the novel doesn't really end on a great high, but it doesn't end on a downer. It just ends, it's a continuation of what it's been describing, that of people trying to negotiate their lives as best they can in difficult circumstances.
Yeah. In terms of that, and people negotiating their lives, what did you make of the Adnan storyline?
Well, that was kind of interesting, because Adnan is Rob's probably best friend when he's growing up. But Adnan increasingly distanced himself from the community, from his friendships, and in the end just basically disappears to pursue an actually successful kind of career for a while, doesn't he? But I think it is, you know, what is Cartwright trying to say? I think he's trying to say that it's difficult to be in that community and with all the different tensions and all that, all the stuff that's going on, but it's even harder just to abstract yourself from it. There is no escape. I mean, he tries to escape, doesn't he? But he ends up watching the game, the England game, in the stadium. He ends up so he's doing what they're all doing in this community centre, getting drunk, and he's doing exactly the same, but he's there. So I don't know. I mean, that was my take, that you can't escape, and to try to escape, in fact, even probably makes things worse for you.
So I think I read it slightly differently, which was that I thought what they were saying was you can't escape and stay, if you see what I mean. For him to have escaped and become successful, he had to absolutely get out completely. But in doing so, it has not made him any happier. It hasn't made him a better person. You know, he ends up sleeping with hookers and disappointing the love of his life and generally being like no better off, even though he is financially better off.
Yes. But I wondered if the character Jasmine Qureshi, whose mother is white, her father is a successful surgeon, heart surgeon from Pakistan, originates from Pakistan, who saves the lives of many members of the community, the white community, in actual fact. And they're very grateful for it. But yeah. Jasmine is brought up in that community for a while, but then they move out to Malvern, to somewhere a bit posher. And then she is cut off from it. She goes to university and becomes a teacher. But then she comes back. And she comes back to actually address the literacy issues, the very profound literacy issues, which lots of the kids in Cinderheath have got. So she kind of almost, you know, she goes, but she comes back. And in a way, maybe she's the ideal character in that respect, because Rob never goes away. He's always there. Adnan just tries to distance himself from it, but it doesn't really work out. And she goes away, but comes back with skills and abilities for her to be able to help. And not be like her head, you know, thinking that people in England shirts are kind of borderline racists.
True, but in the end, she is getting back with her London-based boyfriend, so we don't know how that's going to end up.
We don't know. I mean, everything's tentative at the end of the novel, isn't it?
I think for me, a large part of the Jasmine storyline was basically for her to be contrasted with Stacey. She is the thing that Rob thinks he should want, but actually what he really wants is good old working class Stacey.
Yes, I wondered about that and how that might be read, but I still think that Jasmine is probably the archetype. I mean, she's from a mixed heritage. She's not quite working class, but she's kind of middle class, but it's all mixed up. She's local, but she's from outside. She's come back. So that's the thing about this novel, is it doesn't tell you what to think, or if it is, it does it very subtly, very subtly. I didn't notice. We're not meant to like the BNP, but we're not meant to hate the people that support the BNP. Not all of them, but for sure, anyway.
Yeah.
And it makes you think about things, and I think that's one of the functions of a novel, a good novel. It kind of doesn't give you obvious solutions. This has got no obvious solutions. It doesn't go for New Labour in any big kind of Corbynite, pre-Corbynite way. It doesn't go for anybody in particular. It just raises a series of complex problems and just I think it's just asking us to take those people seriously in their own terms. Not to castigate them, not to stereotype them, but to try to understand how it is that where they are and why they're like that, and to try to think about how can we all help each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, as you say, it's not hitting you over the head. It's just laying out a landscape and saying, well, this is really complicated, but at the moment, nobody is thinking about how we pick through this. So maybe we could look at this in more detail. And that's what it does. It focuses in on this very small ward, although I have to say 10,000 votes in a ward seems very high to me, but what would I know? It takes this small microcosm, uses the frame of football, and just drills into it relentlessly so that you can see people's lives exposed and think about the pressures on those lives. And it doesn't tell you what to think about those pressures. It just shows you that they're there.
And on that wonderful sort of summary of what the novel is trying to do, I think we should conclude our discussion for the listener who's probably got finished their cup of coffee and their hobnob. And I want to do something better with their time. So yes, this was our World Cup special, although it's as much about politics as about the World Cup. Just because it's about football, don't let that put you off, please. It is a novel well worth thinking about.
It's
got lots of issues that are going on today still, and so it's worth a read. Mm. So this, I just now need to remind you that this has been a Political Human production, to thank Stuart Wood for the theme tune. And do you want to say goodbye, Emma?
Goodbye, Emma.
Goodbye, Emma.